Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy show for you today. We will hear from Brian McCormick of the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, talking about how the Columbia County Sheriff has two different policies for cooperating with the immigration officials. We will also hear from Larry Fetterman, giving us a tour of the Ram's Horn Livingston Sanctuary in Catskill, describing the dragonflies and damselflies there. We'll hear music from Columbia County-based Elvis Perkins. We'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news.
You're listening to WGXC Accra, 90.7 FM.
Wave Farms Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Accra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Acre broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wave Farms Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Mary Jo Downing of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Monday, July 10th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports in Porcupine Soup that spongy moss are all over the area this year, and the invasive species can be bad for local trees. Previously known as gypsy moss, they don't eat much, but lay eggs that become caterpillars, which decimate trees. Sandra Linnell, Community Horticulture Program Coordinator with Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, said, quote, "We have received a lot of phone calls about this pest. We just created an informational page on our website," unquote. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says one spongy moth caterpillar can eat up to a square foot of leaves each day. Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene County says, quote, "The caterpillars feed on leaves of the forest, shade, ornamental and fruit trees, and shrubs. A single defoliation can kill some evergreens, but usually two or more defoliations are needed to kill hardwoods," unquote. The moss, reported in swarms locally, will only live about 2 weeks, so will be gone soon. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Times Union reports that the state police are raising the maximum age to join their ranks from 29 to 34. Other businesses and governments are also having trouble hiring enough employees. Some, like the state of New York, are also changing their rules to attract new employees. As New York announced last week, it was waiving fees for all civil service examinations through December 2025. With the state police, Governor Kathy Hochul approved their request to also increase the number of academy classes from 2 to 4, with a $66 million budget allocation. Acting State Police Superintendent Stephen A. Negrelli said, quote, "This change will allow us to recruit the most diverse and skilled group of candidates possible. There are many qualified candidates from the military or other careers who decide they want to transition to the state police, but because of the previous age requirement, some were not eligible. By raising the age, we are ensuring that we have the best and most qualified candidates possible to carry on that legacy and serve and protect the people of New York," unquote. State police are also trying to attract more female and minority employees and has redesigned its recruitment program. The governor's office said the efforts includes, quote, "meeting with leaders in communities that are underrepresented within law enforcement with the goal of building positive long-term relationships," unquote. To find out more about jobs with the state police, go to joinstatepolice.ny.gov. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Jamel Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that construction began on a section of Fish and Game Club Road July 5th and continues through August 4th with the road closed to traffic. Culvert is being replaced just to the west of Tishauer Road in Claverick. To get around the Columbia County construction, drivers are detoured onto State Route 217, State Route 23, and State Route 9H. Columbia County Public Works Commissioner Ray Jerkowski said, quote, "Previously there's an existing water course that goes underneath the roadway that was carried under the road by three service culvert pipes, and those pipes were slightly undersized, but also they were problematic and prone to clogging and cleaning out periodically. The work that is taking place because of the closure is replacing those three pipes with large precast concrete box culvert. It's a larger structure," unquote. Jerkowski notes that climate change is causing larger storms locally, so the larger culvert is needed. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, July 10th. We are 52.3% of the way through the year. There are 75 days left until the official start of fall. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Tannersville to 68 in Copaig. Regional average soil temperature is 70 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be low and are likely to remain there until Thursday. Today will be wet and wild. Some places are already showing signs of storm damage. Highway and power crews are responding now. Check your regular traffic resources before heading out today. Rain chances taper off through the day, ending around midnight. Dew points will be pushing those air conditioners, even though today is a little cooler than recent days. We get a high of 77 happening at 5 p.m. Overnight, we see a muggy low of 62 degrees. Tomorrow, things get a chance to dry out, mostly sunny with a high of 88. 64 degrees overnight takes us into a mostly dry-looking Wednesday with a high of 86. Some afternoon rain could show up. Thursday, high of 82, rain comes back. Today's tide schedule is low tide will be at 3:57 a.m., high tide at 9:35 a.m., low tide again at 4:17 p.m., and high tide once again at 10:16 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 78 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:19 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:25 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun is active and we have a 10% chance of X-class flares. Plasma winds will be slow at 348 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are no chances of aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 183. And it's pledge drive time once again. So come on down to WGXE.org, hit that donate button, and whatever you choose to give, the price is right.
Am I you or are you me?
You are a happy person, full of imaginative thoughts which pour forth constantly. Each day you feel more lovable, more interesting. You become more interested in others. You recognize and accept the friendship that people offer you, for you truly deserve it. You have a deep and sincere respect for yourself and for your personal worth to others. It is easy for you to accept the help and cooperation of others. You see their help to you as an expression of mutual friendship and understanding. You now realize that giving and receiving are two sides of a single coin. You're aware of the trust and confidence you generate in others, and it makes you feel good. You think of yourself as a warm, generous, and loving person. You easily express love and affection, and you find it easy to accept love and approval. You like yourself because you are a friendly and giving person. You accept yourself as a unique and valuable person. You're open, honest, and direct in your relations with people. You recognize that you are exceptionally talented and highly creative. This awareness makes you feel good.
You and me, we're see-through homesick and heartbroken. Would you turn me away if the walls were all I could see? In your place, leave me alone with my headphones. I'll be alright. I'll leave you alone with your headphones. We'll be just fine.
That was See Through from the 2020 album Creation Myths from Columbia County-based musician Elvis Perkins.
Next, we're going to hear from the Master Gardeners at the Cornell Cooperative Extension. They have a podcast called Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. And each week on WGXC, we'll hear different segments from the show focused on local gardening and gardening for the time of year it is.
This is Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley, and today we're having a conversation with Larry Fetterman on the topic of dragonflies, birds, the Ramshorn Livingston Nature Sanctuary in Catskill, and whatever else happens to come up in the conversation. I always like to start with asking our guests to tell us about themselves. That way they self-edit and we hear about what's important to them. Larry, I'm going to have to limit you to 5 minutes because you're involved in so many divergent things. I wouldn't know where to start. So, Larry, tell us about yourself.
First, thank you so much for having me on this podcast series. A great way to spread the knowledge that so many people in the area have about the natural world in our area. So, I got involved birding. I was a young lad growing up in Queens, New York, and my earliest recollection is going to the former World's Fair site in Flushing, Queens, which was near to my home with my dad, and looking at the birds that were flying over Flushing Lake and wondering what gives them so much freedom and why do they enjoy what they're doing. And it just led to a, at this point, long life of enjoying birds and nature and outdoors. About 30 years ago, when my daughter was at that time about 3 years old, I was taking her over for swimming lessons at Hudson High School. And as we're crossing Rip Van Winkle Bridge, she looked out and she said, "Daddy, what's that big bird?" And I looked out and it was an adult bald eagle. So up to that point, my local involvement with birds since I had left New York City in 1973, I wasn't very involved, but I realized I have a captive audience since I was Mr. Mom for my daughter's young years. So I got involved in our local Audubon chapter, Northern Catskills Audubon Society. And that turned into a approximately 30-year adventure with Audubon New York, the state program of National Audubon. I ended up with the chapter, becoming their president, their newsletter editor, their field trip leader, in other words, chief cook and bottle washer. And I turned my hobby of birding into a job working for National Audubon Society. And for 15 years, I was the education coordinator for three sanctuaries here in the Hudson Valley, one in Greene County, the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary, and two across the river, one in Columbia County, Rhinestrom Hill Sanctuary, and one in Dutchess County, Buttercup Farm Sanctuary. For these sanctuaries, I created and led education programs for all ages, from young children and family groups all the way through college-age students. And once I left Audubon, New York, I've continued to be a field guide and an outdoor naturalist, outdoor educator, and I run my own walks and talks. In fact, this morning was the second in my six-week series of bird walks at the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary. Since that sanctuary, A, is physically close to me, and it's just near and dear to my heart. So that's the one of the divergent things that I'm involved with. My main career, I'm a professional musician. I'm a guitarist. I like to say I shared the stage with many, many country acts in my 40-some-odd year, over 40-year career. I still play in a local country band and the Shameless Commerce Division of Larry Fetterman. I'm in the country band Thunder Ridge. You can see us performing at lots of outdoor venues in the Hudson Valley. One of our favorite gigs is Music in the Park in Catskill, their Thursday night series. And I also play in a duo with one of my bandmates. It's a duo called Gray Matter. So now that things are hopefully getting a little bit quieter and less restrictive due to COVID, you'll see both Thunder Ridge and Gray Matter out and about and playing some more.
You're definitely a jack of all trades here. So, Larry, I'm going to pick out one topic for today. Mention of dragonflies sparked some interest. So let's talk about dragonflies. You're known as an expert on birds, and I know you're involved with that Ramshorn Livingston Nature Sanctuary in Catskill. Is it a combination of your interest in flying things and wet places that got you interested in dragonflies?
So I love that question, a combination of flying things and wet places. When I started with Audubon, we were basically teaching about birds and habitats. But right around early 2005, New York State decided that we needed to do a survey on dragonflies and damselflies. It's an underrepresented group of critters in our ecosystem. And there were many scientists involved through the conservation department and through a funding source, Biodiversity Research Institute. But the way that this survey was going to really work was to get an army of volunteers to do surveying. And it piqued my interest because when we study birds, the best time to watch birds is first thing in the morning at first light up until around 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. So I guess for job security, I said, well, I'll learn about dragonflies since they depend on warmth and sunlight to fly. And I jumped in wholeheartedly to learn about these critters and ended up being the statewide volunteer coordinator for the effort for the statewide dragonfly survey project. We started off in the first year in 2005 with approximately 300 volunteers now, and I went across the state to teach about how to identify them, how to study them, and as importantly, how to catch them. As I said, we started off with about 350 volunteers the first year. When we were done with the survey project in the last year, we had over 1,100 volunteers across the state going to different, as you guys put it, wet places that dragonflies would frequent.
Impressive.
So that's, in a nutshell, what got me interested and where I took my interest in flying things and wet places.
Let me circle back to the Ram's Horn Livingston site. We sort of hopped over that as being a wet place. You lead walks there pretty frequently. Can you give us a little history of how it came to be?
Sure. Yeah, the Ram's Horn Livingston Sanctuary is a beautifully compact sanctuary that started off in 1973 when Henry Livingston, the famous Henry Livingston from the steamboat, the Fulton's Folly days back in the ancient history of this country. So Henry Livingston donated the first 162 acres to the National Audubon Society. And this included the Ramshorn Creek, but the only access to the sanctuary was via the creek off of the Hudson River. Through subsequent acquisitions by Scenic Hudson and Audubon, the acreage of the sanctuary has increased to its current size of over 600 acres. And we are proud to say that we're protecting the sanctuary, which is the part of the largest tidal swamp in the Hudson River Valley.
So what's available for the public to do there on their own? I know there's trails, but is there access to water travel, like with perhaps kayaks or canoes?
Yes. On their own, we'll start with the trails. It's an 8/10 of a mile walk down an old farm road that's very easily accessed, that takes you down to the Ramshorn Creek. It's a little bit interesting to try to take a canoe or kayak down because you can't drive down to the boat launch at the creek. But we have seen people with wheels mounted to their kayaks or canoes. But the easiest way to access by water is to travel about a little less than 1/2 of a mile south from Dutchman's Landing or Catskill Point along the shore of the Hudson, which is a nice shallow traverse. People sometimes panic when they think that they have to paddle out on the Hudson River, but it's very shallow along the shoreline.
Larry?
And then, yeah.
I'm afraid of water. Is there a sign?
Is there a sign?
If you're taking your little kayak and you're going down the river looking for the spot to go over into the reserve, is there a sign?
There's one wonderful marker that will let you know you're at the Ramshorn Creek.
That's all I need.
First thing that you'll notice on the opposite side of the river is a white former boathouse. And that was the boathouse of Henry Livingston. And it's directly across the Hudson River from the mouth of the Ramshorn Creek. But the Ramshorn Creek is the first body of water other than the Hudson that you will encounter traveling south on the river. No famous last words, you can't miss it. You truly can't miss it.
You don't know me, Larry. All right, so there's a lot going on there. Let's bounce back. I'm going circular today. Where do the dragonflies come in?
As we might know or might not know, dragonflies get their start in the water. They lay their eggs in every different type of water, from streams to ponds to lakes to the Hudson River. There are even some dragonflies that found in saltwater habitats. So with the Ramshorn Livingston Sanctuary, we've got the habitats of a marsh, we've got the swamp habitats, so that's perfect breeding ground for dragonflies.
That was an excerpt of an interview from the Nature Calls Conversations from the Hudson Valley podcast from the master gardeners of the Cornell Cooperative Extension for Columbia and Greene Counties. You can hear the full episode at the Cornell Cooperative Extension webpage or in the WGXC archives at wgxc.org or at ccecolumbiagreen.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
We know what takes place in terms of cluster bombs being very dangerous to civilians. They don't always immediately explode. Children can step on them. That's a line we should not cross.
California Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Lee tells CNN she opposes the Biden administration's decision to send cluster munitions to Ukraine. The shells release hundreds, even thousands, of smaller bombs that scatter over large areas, and they've been banned by more than 120 countries. Other lawmakers support the move, saying Ukraine's most recent counteroffensive could stall as it runs low on artillery shells. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has called a special legislative session this week in hope of enacting a six-week abortion ban. Reynolds says her administration is also increasing efforts to improve maternal health.
My goal is to provide birth control over the counters. We have adoption that we're enhancing and making sure that families know that those are an option as well.
The proposed measure is similar to a 2018 law the state Supreme Court declined to reinstate last month. Abortion is currently legal for up to 20 weeks there. Meanwhile, lawmakers in Maine have given final approval to one of the least restrictive abortion laws in the country. Governor Janet Mills says she'll sign the bill, allowing an abortion anytime a doctor says it's medically necessary. She says no one should have to leave their own state to get the medical care they need.
Regardless of your zip code or your income status, you have that right, and I will fight to preserve it.
An Oklahoma judge has thrown out a lawsuit seeking reparations for three survivors of the 1921 Tulsa race massacre. Lawyer Demario Solomon Simmons criticizes the city of Tulsa for using the survivors' story for tourism, yet refusing to address their pain.
We will continue to fight for reparations for the massacre. We will continue to fight for truth, justice, and equity for our three living survivors and all of the descendants throughout this entire country.
A century ago, and possibly America's most violent ever race riot, a white mob burned 35 square blocks of a prosperous black community in Tulsa over 2 days. As many as 300 people may have been killed. Rhode Island and Massachusetts are the latest states to issue driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants. Local police say it helps them to bring people out of the shadows. And Franklin Soltz of the Driving Families Forward Coalition says it makes the roads safer.
This law will benefit them enormously by allowing them to have the right to mobility, which is such a basic right that we all take for granted.
19 states now have similar laws. Southern California Edison and two other companies will pay $22 million to settle government claims that a fallen Edison power line sparked a 2016 wildfire. The money will go to cover the costs of fighting the Ray fire. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Ohioans are mobilizing against Issue 1, an effort by the anti-voter state legislature raising the bar to pass a citizen ballot initiative to 60%. The legislature's proposed constitutional amendment comes up for a vote on August 8th. From our past reports, you know that Ohio is one of several states rushing to raise the threshold to pass a ballot initiative from a simple 50% plus one majority to 60% or more, and to make the qualifying signature rules more difficult. Ohio's current rules have been in place since 1912. Why the rush? Successful 2022 ballot initiatives in Kansas and Michigan enshrined reproductive rights and protected voting, and signatures are already being collected in Ohio for a reproductive rights ballot initiative this November. Earlier this month, Ohio Republicans resurrected a special election in August, removed just last year because of low turnout and its $20 million price tag. Democracy groups are challenging the proposed language of Issue 1 in court, which, because the proposal hasn't yet passed, requires only a 50% plus one majority. The conservative Ohio Supreme Court isn't likely to change Issue 1's language. So, pro-democracy coalitions and reproductive rights groups are doing it the old-fashioned way, mobilizing voters to show up for the summertime special election and vote down the assault on the power of the voters. Dive deeper at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. Why did you say
that? Aloha out there in radio land.
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues. The show is a monthly roundup of new music, plumbing psych, folk, cosmic Americana, indie, garage, and exploratory titles alongside enough classic gems to hold it all together like glue. You can tune into the show every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st Congressional Districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC Newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
Luke Parsnow reports in New York State of Politics that the Hudson Valley will be featured prominently nationally during the congressional elections next year, as Republicans took control of the House of Representatives in 2022 by flipping several Hudson Valley districts from Democrats. On July 5th, one former representative, Mondaire Jones, announced he will try to unseat Republican Representative Mike Lawler in New York's 17th congressional district. Jones said on social media, quote, "I've never been Washington's choice. It's because I stand up to corruption. I battle with Republicans trying to overthrow our democracy and ban abortion, even as I push my party to fight harder for working people. I'm running to finish the work I began," unquote. Jones was elected to the former 17th district in 2020. But after redistricting, Democrat Sean Maloney switched from the 18th to the 17th district, which he lost, and Jones ran in the 10th district, losing the Democratic primary to Dan Goldman. In a statement, a spokesperson for Lawler criticized Jones with the same attacks that won Republicans' elections in 2022, saying Jones, quote, "supports the defund the police movement and New York's disastrous cashless bail law and voted for the reckless spending that saddled us with record high inflation," unquote. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Jeff Colton reports in City and State that Democrat Josh Riley announced on July 6th that his campaign for the 19th congressional district nomination raised over $775,000 in the first fundraising quarter of his campaign. Riley lost to Republican Mark Molinaro in the 2022 election for the congressional seat, one of the districts in New York where Republicans flipped control from Democrats. Riley released his fundraising totals ahead of the July 15th federal filing deadline. Earlier in the year, from January to March, Molinaro raised $494,000 and transferred in another $145,000 to his campaign. Much of Molinaro's fundraising came from corporate political action committees such as MetLife, Honeywell, and Pepsi, while Riley is not taking donations from corporate PACs. The New York Post first reported that at least two political action committees have sent fundraising emails from former Senator Al Franken asking for donations to Riley's campaign. And while Riley raised money with Franken's help, so did Molinaro, sending out a letter asking for donations because, quote, "we can't allow disgraced Hollywood elites like Al Franken to interfere in our elections," unquote. In the 2022 election, Riley outraised Molinaro $4.2 million to $2.5 million, with another $3 million in outside spending, split roughly evenly between the two candidates. Read more about this story in City and State.
Mid-Hudson News reports that Ulster County is getting new voting machines. The Ulster County Board of Elections will buy the machines from Hart Intercivic. The Board of Elections released a statement saying, and I quote, "Hart Intercivic stands out as an all-American-made voting solution with a forward-thinking vision to make our elections more accessible and accountable. The commitment to innovation, security, and voter satisfaction aligns seamlessly with the goals of maintaining the integrity and efficiency of the electoral process in Ulster County, end quote. And while Republicans across the country have denigrated the integrity of voting machines by several different companies, Republican Commissioner John Quigley is in favor of Hart Intercivic machines, saying, and I quote, "Their proven track record and dedication to producing cutting-edge voting solutions give us the confidence that we have made the right choice for the voters of Ulster County," end quote. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
Did you know Columbia County-based musician Elvis Perkins is the son of actor Anthony Perkins? His mom was Barry Berenson, actress who died in the September 11th terrorist attacks. Here is what is probably Elvis Perkins' most popular song from his 2007 album Ash Wednesday. This is While You Were Sleeping.
While you were sleeping, your babies grew. The stars shined and the shadows moved. Time flew, the phone rang, there was a silence when the kitchen sang its songs competed like kids for space. We stared for hours in our maker's face. They gave us pics, said go mine the sun and go gold and come back when you're done. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. While you were sleeping, you tossed, you turned, you rolled your eyes as the world burned. The heavens fell, the earth quaked. I thought you must be, but you weren't awake. No, you were dreaming. You ignored the sun. You grew your power garden for your little one. And you found brides for them on Christmas Eve. They hung young Cain from the Adam trees and danced. Uh-oh. 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 While you were sleeping, I tossed and I turned till I closed my eyes. But the future burned through the planet. A hair gray as I relived the day. While you were sleeping, the money died. Machines were harmless and the earth sighed. The wind, you swept sound and gravity brought my oceans rose, sang about decay, while the witches flew and the mermaids stayed. Full of dreams, you overslept, in keeping with the quiet. Through the walls I crept, I walked on tiptoes, and darkness swirling over all the kitchen in the early morning. Uh-oh. I'll never catch up to you, who sleeps so sound. My arms are useless, my heart beats too loud to go to sleep, my mind's too proud to bow. While you were sleeping, the time changed. All your things rearranged, your vampire mirrors face. ships vanish to sea. Can it be my honeybee between you and me? So I waited for a riddled sky to be solved again by the sunrise, and I made a death soup for life for my father's ill widowed wife. Did you have that strangest dream before you woke? 'Cause in your gown you had the butterfly stroke. Did it escape you like some half-told joke when you reached for your plume of smoke?
Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that Columbia County Sheriff Don Krapf says the corrections officers he oversees can cooperate with federal immigration agents, but the law enforcement officers he oversees cannot. Krapf sent the Times Union a lengthy statement on his conflicting policy after an incident last month when two members of the Board of Supervisors and Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson waited outside the sheriff's office for a man who did not emerge from the building at his release time. Johnson and Hudson Third Ward Supervisor Michael Shimides were eventually told he was no longer there, as Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers had taken him away. Krapf had previously announced a non-cooperation policy with ICE, but now his officers were cooperating. But Krapf claims he was only cooperating partially, saying, quote, "The extent to which DCJS shares data with federal authorities is unknown to me, but I can state confidently that my office did not notify ICE of this individual's presence in the Columbia County Corrections Facility," unquote. So now Krapf is saying that the non-cooperation policy does not apply to his office's corrections division, only the deputies he oversees. Supervisor Chimides said, quote, "The interpretation that the policy only applies to part of the sheriff's office is a surprise to me, and it's confusing. If you look at the policy itself, it says the sheriff's office. If you look through the document it was part of, it defines the CCSO as having multiple divisions, and it describes the policy as being CCSO policy. So I haven't seen any prior information implying the policy was only geared toward the law enforcement division," unquote. Krapf's written policy says, quote, "The Columbia County Sheriff's Office has a welcoming and inclusive policy towards immigrants in Columbia County," unquote, and, quote, "The Columbia County Sheriff's Office does not actively participate in immigration enforcement," unquote. Columbia County Sanctuary Movement co-founder Brian McCormick said, quote, "The policy very clearly states it's for the Columbia County Sheriff's Office. It does not specify it's for a particular subset of employees," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
We're talking today with Brian McCormick, who's with the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. And recently there was some controversy about the sheriff, Don Drapt, down in Columbia County, because he actually turned over somebody maintained by the county sheriff's department over to ICE, despite clear county policy not to do so. His argument was, well, the rule only apply to law enforcement individuals, not corrections staff. So Brian, how do people sort of react into what the sheriff is saying about this distinction?
Well, thank you for having me on today. I think the public is outraged regarding the sheriff's response, his office's response to this incident. They have changed their story in how this occurred, why it occurred, and if it was authorized by this policy. We have had folks rally outside of the sheriff's office, including the child of the member who was given to ICE by the sheriff's office. And we've also had a lot of participation in public discourse, including the recent public safety committee, to express our concerns around the violation of the policy.
You know, it was interesting to see that actually a number of elected officials apparently had gone or were planning to go to the sheriff's department to deal with this person when they were released. So certainly showed a lot of community support. Has this person actually been now deported? What is this person's status at this moment?
Yeah, we were very relieved to have overwhelming community support from elected officials, employers, and family members, as well as other members of the sanctuary movement, to welcome this community member back home. And unfortunately, the sheriff's department decided that behind closed doors and without divulging information, they were going to collaborate with ICE on that day. At this moment, the individual, our member, is currently detained in Batavia, in the Buffalo Federal Immigration Detention Center, and he's awaiting his first hearing.
How did, you know, after this discussion at the recent Columbia County Board of Supervisors meetings, where apparently a number of officials expressed their displeasure with the sheriff's action and heard the sheriff's contention as to what the policy does and doesn't do, is the Board of Supervisors planning any type of, you know, follow-up action to deal with this situation?
I think there's certainly ongoing conversations on what actions can be taken. Unfortunately, this policy is a policy within the department. And while we do believe strongly that this policy is in violation, there is nothing stopping the sheriff from rescinding it. And in fact, he has already proposed draft amendments to this policy in order to make collaboration with ICE easier. So there's certainly a group of public officials who are working to resolve this issue and hold the sheriff's department accountable, but it's very unclear what the result will be, and it seems that the sheriff's department is posturing itself to collaborate further with ICE rather than addressing the transparency and accountability concerns that have been raised.
Now, I know in Rensselaer County, which unfortunately has been probably the county most cooperative with ICE in New York State, the county sheriff is up for re-election this year. Actually, the incumbent has decided not to seek re-election. Is the county sheriff up for re-election in Columbia County, or they're in a different schedule?
They are on a different election schedule. This sheriff came into office in January of 2022. And this policy was passed in February of 2021 as part of the police reform process. At that time, his predecessor was the sheriff.
So are there other things that the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement is working on at the moment?
Of course. Regarding this incident, we have been told by the sheriff's department that there are currently 10 individuals who are being held in their facility, and both in meetings as well as in public comment to media outlets, the sheriff has been very adamant that he will do the same exact thing that he did on June 2nd with this member, which is to collaborate with ICE and give them to ICE in what he calls a secure way inside of his own facility. Beyond our accountability and transparency work around non-cooperation agreements in the region, we also have a plethora of services that we offer members, and currently we are the lead organization working with asylum seekers who have been bused to Albany. but we are a robust organization. I encourage everybody to visit our website to learn more about all of our programming and campaign work.
What's the website?
SanctuaryColumbiaCounty.org.
Now, you also mentioned that the individual who was recently turned over to ICE is in Batavia, is coming up for his first hearing. You know, what is, I assume it's his prospects, and, you know, what are the chances that, you know, that he could be released now that he's in ICE custody?
Unfortunately, I'm not at liberty to discuss the particulars of the individual's case, but what I can say is that he is trying to obtain a bond hearing, at which point the judge will determine if he has to fight his defensive immigration case within the confines of the detention center, or if he'll be released back to his family and be able to fight his deportation from the outside. Of course, we hope that he will be released, both for his family and his own health. And the reality of the situation is that individuals who are on the non-detained docket have a lot more flexibility and options for legal representation, therefore strengthens their chances of winning their case.
So how many people in, you know, in Columbia County, you know, are in need of, you know, basically, you know, sanctuary or undocumented workers and are, you know, subject to deportation?
That's a very hard number to come up with, in part because there's no systemic way of collecting that data. As one can imagine, undocumented folks are traditionally fearful of participating in census data collection. And also CCSM works with immigrants as a whole, which is a spectrum from undocumented to a naturalized citizen. So we currently have about 2,500 members throughout Columbia, Greene, Rensselaer, Albany, and Northern Dutchess counties, but there's not a hard number on how many of those folks are undocumented versus how many of them have some sort of status or are allies.
Now, I mentioned that Rensselaer County, you know, particularly at the county level, the leadership, the sheriff, and the county executive are not at all supportive and of immigrants. And, you know, the sanctuary resolution that was passed in the city of Troy actually was vetoed by the Democratic mayor, Patrick Madden. How, you have obviously managed to get the Columbia to take a position not to, county not to cooperate with ICE other than the sheriff. How in general is the sanctuary movement being, you know, accepted by the powers that be in the county?
We are, of course, completely against the Rensselaer County Sheriff's Department 287G agreement with ICE. They are the only department in the entire state, and we have been campaigning with our allied organizations in Rensselaer County to shut down that jail. There are a number of concerns with the treatment of all prisoners there, and we are particularly outraged by the treatment of immigrants as well as their collaboration, desire to continue to collaborate with ICE. Columbia County is definitely a county which many of our community members pride themselves on supporting vulnerable populations. And I believe that the police reform process was an important part of the community being able to give feedback to police in a time where policing strategy was under extreme scrutiny for very good reason. And the police reform process resulted in this policy being passed. This was actually the most significant policy passed within that process. We have had a variety of responses from elected officials throughout our county. The city of Hudson is, of course, a bit more amenable to working with the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement.
I'm Brian McCormick, Columbia County Sanctuary Movement website.
SanctuaryColumbiaCounty.org.
And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Me and my arrow, straighter than narrow. Everyone knows it's me and my ass.
tune in or turn out to the July 18th edition of the Ukuleles Unleashed show on WGXC. This month it is broadcast live from the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill. Host Carmen Borgia and John Sturman are doing a reading and singing Harry Nilsson's The Point on ukuleles, and then doing their live radio show in front of an audience at the Bridge Street Theater. Admission is free to this WGXC event. Turn out or tune in to the Bridge Street Theater, 7:45 to 10 p.m. on Tuesday, July 18th at wgxc.org/listen and 90.7 FM.
...2023 new music there from trombonist Steve Swell. The song was called Dazed and Amused from the For Rena P. Espelot album on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show?